Jovan was a really is a really good kid, and you know, unfortunately for him, he was a good kid in a bad neighborhood. It would almost southeast side of Chicago, striped by gang violence. He had one brother who was had passed away from an HIV related illness. He had another brother who was in jail and had told him, the only reason I'm here is because I stayed in a gang. Don't get in a gang. And he really, it's almost unfortunate, because if he had had more, he had no experience with the legal system. People, you know, there were 12-year-old girls in gangs in this neighborhood, and lots of arrests. He'd seen people shot, and he'd managed to stay out of the whole thing. He was kind of that guy who, he put on a clip-on tie, and he had a job, and he took a bus downtown in high school. He went to a vocational high school, really wanted to be a lawyer, always in his head thought he would be a lawyer. He got into Ohio State. He was one of the first people in his family to graduate from high school, much less get accepted to college. But that sort of labyrinth of financial aid and no one to help him, it just kind of went by the wayside. And it was October. No, I'm taking it back. It was August. And he's walking around with some guys. He kind of debated that night whether or not to go out. And sometimes, you know, I don't know about you, but sometimes, you know, you look back and you go, wow, a decision I made.
Right.
You know, for you, it might have been going up to the redhead in the bar, who you're now married to. That had a happy ending. You know, other decisions don't. And, you know, you don't want to scare anyone. We don't want to walk around, like, on eggshells constantly. But he had this sense, like, yeah, I don't know if I should go out tonight. And he went. And the guys he were out with got in a fight. And about seven people were around at the time. And like all these people, Jovan saw the beginning of the fight. And then he thought to himself, somebody's getting in trouble. I got to get out of here.
Right.
So he took off, and it really wasn't, unfortunately for him, it wasn't a big, like, a fight in a neighborhood was just not a big deal, unfortunately. So he didn't try to stop the fight, something he always says he regrets, but in his neighborhood, you really just didn't do that. They're coming after your mom the next day if you do. So he walked away and kind of continued to just keep his sort of nose clean, as he'd always done. But we have some hardworking cops in Chicago, and we love them. And they were trying to later find out who was in this fight, because a man died. A baseball bat came out. And this lovely man named Howard Thomas, who everyone says is just an incredibly nice guy, on his way home from his job, and he died. So the cops pick up, you know, everybody who was there that night, as they should. You know, I don't think there was anybody who will say that they shouldn't have talked to Jovan. I mean, he was with those guys. That would be bad police work if they didn't. But they just kind of had in their head that, you know, everybody was there, was in the fight. They had no independent witnesses that said Jovan was in the fight. But, you know, they sort of talked to all the guys, and some of the guys said, yeah, we were all there. Well, they got – everybody can do this. They got tunnel vision. They really just did. Defense lawyer, I can do this. You can do this. Where you just – they just decided that, you know, he definitely – he was there that night. They were looking for 3 to 5 people the whole time, so it was kind of – it was a hard case to solve and to put together. But it was pretty easy, actually, to get Jovan Mosley, ultimately, easy to get him to say he did something, because they chained him to a wall for 2 days.
He's chained to a wall?
Well, yeah, they brought him in cuffed, and they took one of the cuffs off, put the other cuff on the wall, and sat him on a bench with no back. And I challenge you, if you're sitting right now and you're listening to this, just sit forward for a second and give me 5 minutes. Don't lean back for 5 minutes. Your back will start to hurt. Now, put him there for 2 days. With no food, no water, no sleep, no bathroom. And he kept telling them, I did not touch that man. The detectives will tell you, oh, yeah, he said that over and over and over and over. But, you know, they had decided that they knew what had happened and that he was in it. And all they said, all we really want you to do is say you threw 2 punches. Now, come on. We don't really care about you. We care about the guy with the bat. Tell us you threw 2 punches and you can go home. And he kept saying, I didn't touch the man. And then they said, this is kind of interesting, and it's actually pretty smart. They said, tell us you also took a sip of his pop. And I think Jovan once said to me, I never even said pop. I always said soda. And he kept, well, didn't even really know what they were talking about. But finally, after 2 days of this, they took him out once, and it was for a lineup. And they did not tell him that what the guy in the lineup said was, yes, I recognize him. Yes, he was there that night, and he didn't do anything. They don't have to tell you. They told him that actually they said you were identified. They made it sound as if.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So sort of being faced with all this. And, you know, really, to be honest, I, having gone to law school, if someone said, what's the big deal? Two punches and you took a sip of pop. Come on. I probably would have been like, yeah, you know what? And what happens when you're innocent, actually, I've learned since then, is that you it goes against you. It works against you because you think, I didn't do this. I know I didn't do this. So if I can just get out of here, I will set this straight. Because you know in your heart of hearts, you don't even have to, like, you know, ooh, should I feel a little bit guilty? Like, you did not do this thing. It actually plays against you because you're willing to sort of do anything to get out, and then it starts to make you feel crazy. So they finally said, here, we'll write this thing up. It says that you threw two punches in the fight, and you took a sip of pop, and you can go home. Finally, he said, fine. He signed the thing, and they said, okay, you're going to be processed now. You can, you'll be going home. We just got to process you. So he didn't really realize what was going on. Again, he didn't realize until he was put on a bus, and they wrote two slash marks on his hand with a marker. And he was looking at it and like, what's going on? And he gets on the bus, and he'd heard that sometimes they took you home or they took you to a bus stop at least to get home if you were questioned. So he was kind of relieved. And the guy next to him on the bus said, hey, where are you going? And Javon said, well, I'm going to go home. And the guy looked at his hands. He looked at these two slash marks. In actuality, what it was the number 11. He said, you're going to Division 11, dude. You're going to Supermax. And Supermax is technically what we use usually for federal prisons, but it's what the inmates in Cook County call the maximum security division of our county jail, where people go when you can't post bail, and you're not going to get on. You're either not going to get out, you're not allowed out, or you can't afford to get out. And it's the worst of the worst, right? It's the alleged murders, rapists, big drug cases, and he'd heard of it. So when Javon heard you're going to Supermax, his heart just sunk. And I still think he believed, though, okay, no, this will work out. But pretty soon he learned that was just not the case.